The Thanksgiving holiday is over. The coronavirus is not. Good Monday morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Hope you had a nice Thanksgiving weekend. We are back to business this morning, and just ahead, we're going to tell you what Florida public health experts are saying about the pandemic's dangers as we head into December. Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Then later, tomorrow is Giving Tuesday. A look ahead at how you can make your dollars go farther to help more people right now in this community struggling in these challenging times. Speaking of which, we have some grim new numbers, unfortunately, to share with you. Florida is expected to surpass 1 million total COVID-19 cases either today or tomorrow. The positive case rate Sunday jumped to 992,661 in the state. The positivity rate is also up to 10.6%. That's a very unhealthy rate that we need to make you aware of this morning. Just over 4,000 people in Florida are in the hospital with the virus. We have a death toll of 18,736. And unfortunately, public health experts say the travel and the family gatherings that took place over the Thanksgiving weekend could cause a spike in coronavirus cases as we head into December. We're pleased to welcome back on the program right now Dr. Mobeen Rathore, pediatrician, co-chair of the Baptist Health System Infection Prevention and Control Committee. Dr. Rathore, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Also joining Dr. Jeff Goldhagen, chief of the Division of Community and Societal Pediatrics at UF Health JAX. Dr. Goldhagen, good to have you as well.
Good morning.
Here's our question to callers. Did you travel over Thanksgiving? Did you have a family gathering? Or did you hunker down with just your immediate pod, as they call it? What are your concerns about the uptick in COVID we are expecting as we head into December? Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Emails to First Coast Connect at WJCT.org. Tweets to at Melissa N. Jax, and our Facebook page is open. Dr. Rathore, let's begin with you. The nation's top infectious disease expert Sunday, Dr. Anthony Fauci, said that we could be looking at surge upon surge of coronavirus in the weeks after Thanksgiving. Not good news as we head into the holiday month. What are your biggest concerns for COVID in our area and Florida right now?
Well, other than the news, good news about vaccine, unfortunately, there has been no good news with the COVID-19 right now. The trajectory is already going in a very wrong direction all over the nation and also in Florida. The reason we suspect that these infections are going to hit another peak close to holidays to the Christmas is because it takes about 2 to 3 weeks for these numbers to reach their peak after exposures occur, which many people are expecting would have occurred around the Thanksgiving holiday. So I think we need to be ready for that. I think our health systems are right now coping with the upsurge, but I think there's going to be a limit to that. If we continue to have increased number of cases, increased number of hospitalizations, increased number of patients in the ICU and intubated, it's going to be a terrible situation. So I think we need to be very careful, Melissa. And I think while that is extremely important, Melissa, that the gatherings and those either super spreader small gathering events are going to be, can have a terrible impact on COVID-19 pandemic and local increase in numbers, I think it's extremely important to remember that what we need to do routinely on a daily basis, masking, social distancing, only going out when you have to, those things are equally important, just because travel is going to make this disease, this pandemic worse in our area and in our nation, we still need to continue to do those important prevention efforts.
Dr. Jeffrey Goldhagen, that message is more important now than ever. What's your insight about that? Given that, we mention this as often as we can on the air, just practically begging people to wear their mask, continue to social distance. People are fatigued with this. And we saw that over Thanksgiving. People just ignoring the pleas of public health experts and traveling by the millions, even though that really still isn't a safe thing to do. What's your message to people out there who are so wary of this, but they need to hear that we are still very much not out of the woods yet?
Well, the numbers don't lie, and the numbers are indicating that we're in an exponential growth phase with respect to the number of people infected, the number of people hospitalized. Fortunately, the number of people who are dying who are hospitalized has decreased. And I think, Melissa, the reality is if people are not going to be compliant with the demands that are put on them with respect to stopping this the spread of COVID, and the irony is that we can stop the spread of COVID, then we'll be put in the same position as other countries are. England now is in a full lockdown. Los Angeles now is in a full lockdown. There are changes happening around the country with respect to lockdowns. And if, in fact, we're not able as a community to voluntarily stop this spread, then we will end up back in a lockdown with all the social issues that relate to that, all the economic issues that relate to that, all of the educational issues that impact on our children. And so that's where we'll be. You know, it's really interesting that the increase now in the Midwest is in part related to what happened at Sturgis, where there were hundreds of thousands of people that met. None were compliant with mask wearing.
This was a motorcycle rally. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, they left. They left Sturgis, went back to their homes, primarily in the Midwest, seeded communities, and now we see this massive increase in COVID infections throughout the Midwest. So we know what happens. We can predict what happens. We can stop this epidemic, this pandemic. Yet we, as a community, refuse to be completely compliant.
Yeah, and Dr. Rathor, we are expected to top 1 million COVID cases in Florida either today or tomorrow. The mask mandate in Jacksonville has been renewed for another month. That said, Governor DeSantis is actually telling mayors and city leaders around the state that they can't enforce a mask mandate. And he has said multiple times there will be no more lockdowns in Florida. So we're seeing cases continue to rise. We are seeing efforts to get people to mask up thwarted at the statewide level. What can we expect in Florida in December and in January? Because as you said, a vaccine is still months away.
Yeah, we can't wish this epidemic away. I think this pandemic has shown us that we need to take effective measures. And I think if we don't, there's some personal responsibility, of course, but there's also some good strategic planning and some efforts at the level of the government and planning that we do wear the masks and we do follow all the important things that need to happen so it prevents. This is, let me tell you, this is not, we need to take this seriously. I mean, I'm sort of raw right now because over the weekend I lost a friend from medical school, a physician, to COVID-19.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, and this is not something we can take lightly. I think, you know, we know what the science says. Why are we afraid to follow what the science says? I think I know this has economic impact. I think I know it has impact on education on our children. I'm suffering from the same thing. You know, my isolation can't do things. But I think I would hope that people all will choose life over livelihood every day of the week and twice on Sunday. Because I think that's what it means. You can lose your life. Look at how many people, how many families are suffering from this. And I think we know exactly what to do. And the vaccine, you mentioned the vaccine. I think people need to be aware. The vaccine for the general public is months away, okay? Even for the healthcare providers, most healthcare providers are probably not going to be immunized until March or so. If all goes as we think it is going to go and as it is planned, and if there are no hiccups. So I think we need to be very conscious of the fact, yes, vaccine is great news, but even after we have the vaccine, we still have to follow all these preventive measures of masking, social distancing, isolation, all those things. So I think it, you know, we feel like, oh, I'm just meeting with my friend. Well, if you're just meeting with your friend, that could be this event that could cause the infection. As you said earlier, those parts, I like that terminology, those where you live in with your family, the nuclear of your in your household, that's the one that you're going to be most safe with. So, as Jeff said, this is not something if we don't take hold of this now, we don't take that personal and the government responsibility, we're going to pay for it. And we're going to pay for it in a really, really expensive way with our lives.
It's 549-2937 as we speak with Dr. Mobeen Rathore of Baptist Health and Dr. Jeff Goldhagen of UF Health JAX. Are you tired of hearing about the coronavirus? We get it. What we still want your calls as we talk about what we can expect for the next couple of months. 549-2937. Lots of comments on Facebook. Paula writes, for Thanksgiving, it was just me, my husband, and our son. I fixed a special dinner and there were no leftovers. Paula, great job being safe. Dr. Rathore, tell me more about your friend, your physician friend you said that you just lost to coronavirus. Tell me more about that.
Well, he was taking care of patients, and he was following all the precautions that are required to be followed. It was not that he was not doing that.
How old was he? Did he have any?
Oh, you don't want to know my age. So,
did he have any pre-existing conditions, or was he a young, healthy person?
No, he was, you know, he was my age. I wouldn't call him young, but he was, he was healthy, had no high risk factors. But, you know, this is what this disease does. And it was, I can tell you, for the last 2 weeks, all of us, all our friends, we've been through this roller coaster. And, I mean, I can't even imagine what the families go through, when they are losing. They can't even see their family, loved ones. So I think we need to be aware that this becomes a disease that, you know, it does not have to be this way. If we follow the recommendation, it does not have to be this way. It's just very sad that there are still people who don't believe that masks work. I mean, I don't know what else to do. I mean, you're right, Melissa. We are all tired of this isolation. You know, we are all tired of. I mean, I have a mask in my car all the time, and if I have to go to the store, sometimes I leave the car and I forget because that's not naturally coming to me. So I have to go back to my car to get it. So I get it. It's not normal, but nothing is normal right now. But it's something we have to do.
Dr. Goldhagen, it really is upsetting and frustrating to see so many Americans believe complete lies about this pandemic. They believe it's a hoax, they believe that it exists, but it's no worse than the flu. They see mask wearing as an unacceptable infringement on their personal liberty. They even believe hospitals are trying to get people sick so that they can make more money off of this virus. There are so many conspiracies and just total falsehoods floating around out there. So, you know, we try to debunk that on this program whenever we can. I would think as a physician, that's frustrating for you in particular to see that happening.
Right. When we graduated medical school, we took the Hippocratic Oath. But nowhere in that Hippocratic Oath did it require us to be martyrs. And as Mobeen said, he's mourning the loss of a friend. There are thousands of healthcare workers in the U.S. and globally that have lost their lives committed to caring for people. When you see people in the community not wearing masks, experience I had a couple of days ago, I was masked in a store. A woman wasn't wearing a mask. I asked her if she needed a mask, that I would provide her one. She looked at me and she said, if you say one more word to me, I'm going to take out my gun and shoot. So that's really where we are now. This has deteriorated into a political issue. When politics and public health collide, it's not a pretty sight. And we're seeing what the outcome from that is happening now. One of the biggest misconceptions, Melissa, is that young people and others who get the disease and recover from the disease will never have any medical problems thereafter. One of the big misconceptions is that children don't get the disease. About 11% of all new cases now are in children. We don't know what the long-term impact of coronavirus will be on individuals. And so this perception that young people are safe and have nothing to be concerned about is just not the case. And it's beyond, frankly, it's beyond infuriating to be a healthcare professional or be working in the hospital and to see people who are non-compliant. I cannot imagine what is going through the minds of colleagues in North Dakota and South Dakota and other places in the Midwest who are risking their lives every day to care for people who completely ignored any requirements for masking and whose governors actually requested people not mask. I can't imagine what's going through their minds and their families' minds as they risk their lives to care for people who are infected. And you know, this idea that medical professionals need to be martyrs when the rest of the community is not being compliant with actions that are simple and that we know can work is just very disconcerting.
We're speaking with Dr. Jeff Goldhagen of UF Health, Dr. Mobeen Rathore of Baptist Health about COVID. Florida is expected to top 1 million active cases either today or tomorrow. And sadly, the Thanksgiving holiday and all the movement that we saw over the long holiday weekend could spark new cases in December. The vaccine is still months away. So the overriding message here, everyone, is keep wearing your masks, keep distancing, keep taking precautions, as weary as we all might be. We have to keep doing this. What are your thoughts and comments? 549-2937. Susan is on the line. Hi, Susan. Good morning.
Yes, I wanted to ask your guest if he called the police on the woman who threatened him with a gun. Thank you.
Okay. You know, I've heard so many stories like this, Dr. Goldhagen, of these kinds of altercations in stores and such over mask wearing. And a lot of the time there's video of it that goes viral on social media. I'm assuming you didn't escalate the situation with this person. What happened with that?
Well, at the end of the conversation, which ended pretty abruptly, I expressed my hope that she stayed well and that her family stayed well as well. I mean, there's nothing more that you can do. And the irony is that this is in Duval County where there's a mask requirement. You know, I think that those requirements are going to need to be enforced. People are going to need to be escorted out of indoor facilities if they're not wearing masks in order to be able to stop this pandemic. There are a couple other issues, one of which is the availability of vaccine. This is going to be the most complicated public health response in history, and because we have the vaccine doesn't necessarily mean that the distribution process is going to be easy and that local communities, states and local communities, are actually prepared for the complicated distribution process that's going to be required. At this point, our community, as all communities around the country, need to be focused on what are the plans for distribution, how are we going to distribute it, how are we going to make the critical decisions after getting the suggestions from the federal government, the CDC, and so on, as to who is going to get that vaccine first. And so as difficult as it is to maintain relatively simple public health precautions, the distribution process for the vaccine is going to be infinitely more complicated. And so that's the agenda for us at this point in time as well.
All right. Julia in Avondale. Hello, Julia. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning to all your panel there. I just want to make a comment that we have a sorry lack of leadership in this state, starting with Governor DeSantis, in the fact that he cannot and will not make a mask mandate for all of us. That's a simple fix. It's simple, and he can do it, and he refuses to do it. So based on that, I can't wait to see how he mishandles the rollout of the vaccine. Thank you.
Hopefully not, but Julia, thank you. Dr. Mobeen Rathore, yes, Governor DeSantis refuses to do a statewide mask order. In fact, he's even hobbled mayors and county managers from enforcing the ones that they have enacted. He has been bullish about the vaccine and the distribution in Florida. How do you anticipate this working in this state? As Dr. Goldhagen said, this is going to be complicated to get this vaccine rolled out and distributed.
Yeah, I think, first of all, even as I said earlier, even if the vaccine is out there and we are able to immunize the population, we still need the masks. I think people are, hopefully people don't think that once you get the vaccine, you're scot-free, you don't have to do all of the other things. You still have to do those. Remember, what we know about this vaccine is it prevents disease, meaning that if you get the infection, you may not have as severe a disease. That's what the data are showing right now. We don't have any data suggesting that this vaccine prevents infection. Remember the flu vaccine. You get the flu vaccine. If you get the influenza after that, you will not be as sick, right? But you still have the infection. So if you have the infection, you can still give it to other people. So I think that's one part. And I sincerely and honestly wish and pray that we do not bungle the vaccine distribution, because that would not be a good thing for anyone. I think that's an important part. We all need to participate in that, and we need to encourage people to get vaccinated when it becomes available to them. I think in terms of the vaccine mandates, I think vaccine mandates would work. We know when the thing is, the mask mandates would work. We know there is science that says vaccine masks work. So I just cannot imagine why anyone would think that the mask does not work. I understand it is not easy. I understand people have this idea of freedom. I think we all love freedom, our personal freedom. But I would also say hopefully we love our neighbor also. That's a part of our culture also, love thy neighbor and love thy friend. And so we need to protect everybody.
Yeah.
So I think mask mandates do work, and I hope you will have mask mandates that could be enforced.
And isn't there new data to show that when you wear a mask, you really are protecting yourself as well as people around you? In the beginning, they thought, oh, you're only protecting people you come into contact with. But you protect yourself as well, don't you, when you wear a mask?
Exactly. I'm sorry, Melissa. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I absolutely, Melissa. We know now that wearing a mask not only protects everybody else, but also protects you. So I think, hopefully you want to, you yourself want to stay safe. But I think it's our responsibility. I think life is so precious that we need to make sure we protect our lives and we protect everybody else's. And as I said, mandates would help tremendously. Enforceable mandates would help tremendously. We cannot say, oh, the vaccine is coming and that will solve all the problems. It'll help. It'll certainly would be a great help. But we need to get to a high number of immunization. I think most, to reach that level of protection for the community, you're talking about 80-90% of the people being immunized. So I think it's important. I know there's some information in the media this morning that says 60-70, but most people would say it's much higher than that. We don't know exactly, but historically, from other vaccines, we know 90-95% immunization protects the whole community. So we are not going to get there until probably end of next year.
Wow.
So I think we need to be very cognizant of all these issues. You're right. I mean, I'm begging people to do that. Please do that for your sake and for everybody else's sake.
Dr. Goldhagen, there's a couple of folks waiting on hold. We didn't have time to take. One caller wanted to say, I just don't believe masks work. What's your answer to that?
Well, there are people that still believe the Earth is flat. There are people who still believe that climate change is a hoax. There are a few people that we're not going to change their minds. But what we're asking people to do is, whether you believe it or not, to wear your mask. And if the small percentage of people out there that don't want to wear a mask, then they should be precluded from participating in community life. They should not be allowed. They should not be allowed in stores. They should not be allowed to have their kids playing on teams. They should just be precluded from community participation. I think it's simple as that. And I know that that's a radical idea. It's probably not a very popular idea. But in fact, we are in a wartime situation, and we need to do what we know can stop this disease. And the irony is that if we had done this at the onset of the pandemic, then we would be enjoying economic freedoms and personal freedoms, and schools would be open and so on. But it's our failure to respond that is procrastinating and keeping us from actually addressing the issues that we know we can address. And ultimately, you know, the reality is that all public health is political, and our political environment has precluded us from responding the way other high-income countries have responded, and we're paying the price for it.
Well, I want to thank you both, as always, for appearing. Dr. Mobeen Rathore, pediatrician, co-chair of the Baptist Health Infection Prevention and Control Committee. Dr. Jeff Goldhagen, Chief Division of Community and Societal Pediatrics, UF Health JAX. Thanks to you both.
Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you, Melissa.
And much more still ahead. Later, a look ahead to World AIDS Day. It's tomorrow. And we'll tell you about the work being done here in Duval to bring down high rates of HIV. But up next.
We are besieged with higher needs than before because of the pandemic and the economic fallout from the pandemic.
Why Giving Tuesday is taking on new importance this year. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Well, we always call this time of year the season of giving. Tomorrow, you can officially take part in that on Giving Tuesday. It's an international movement that takes place every year, the Tuesday after Thanksgiving, and it encourages all of us to support causes and organizations that need help to assist the less fortunate. This year, that is more important than ever. I spoke with Mary Qureshi, CEO of the Jesse Ball DuPont Fund, about Giving Tuesday. Take a listen. Mari, good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
So Giving Tuesday can't come soon enough for the nonprofit sector. Let me do that again. So Giving Tuesday can't come soon enough. It's critical for the nonprofit sector. They've been hit so hard by the pandemic, the recession. As we talk about Giving Tuesday, what can you tell us about the state of the local nonprofit sector and how they're doing?
So we are besieged with higher needs than before because of the pandemic and the economic fallout from the pandemic. And some nonprofits have been pushed so far that, you know, some number, according to some estimate, about 7% of U.S.-based nonprofits will actually close their doors as a result of the pandemic. And 83% of nonprofits report that they are suffering financially.
That's not good. So there's a lot of suffering out there. It's no surprise. Giving Tuesday is a way to, we can all do our part to support causes and organizations we care about. What are some ideas you can share for everyone out there who would like to know where their dollars can do the most good, how they can be part of Giving Tuesday?
Sure. Well, first off, Giving Tuesday is the first Tuesday after Thanksgiving, right after Cyber Monday. And not as many people know about it as I would like. I'm sure more people know about Black Friday than Giving Tuesday, but
right.
Here's your chance to know. And it is primarily a virtual event, so it's perfect for the pandemic. You should be setting a budget for how much you might be able to give. Many of the nonprofits you love and support will be coming to you and saying, hey, it's Giving Tuesday. Help us by giving us money or spreading the word or by coming to volunteer. And there are increasingly lots of virtual volunteering opportunities. What is really helpful for you to do is to make that visible. I know it used to be that you used to carry out charity anonymously and it wasn't there was no humble bragging, but this is a time to humble brag. This is a time to get out there and say, I gave money to my favorite cause and this is why, and you should too. And it's really designed as a way to raise the consciousness of people all over the world, really, about how important it is to give. We get lots of messages about buying stuff, but not as many around giving, volunteering, and championing the causes you care about. So December 1st, 2020, please get out there on social media and start, you know, talking about what you love.
Absolutely. And I know this is important to you, too. You want people to look for matching opportunities. Let me take a minute to plug WJCT, which is a nonprofit organization. We would love donations on Giving Tuesday. We do lots of matching campaigns where your dollars go twice as far, three times as far. Tell us a little bit about the importance of matching opportunities and how people can be strategic about where they give their dollars.
Yes, and, you know, public radio stations do an amazing job telling people, in this hour, you can get matched or twice as much. And we, too, have been working with our partners to match funding, especially on Giving Tuesday, but really throughout all of the last quarter of the year, which is as important to the charitable sector as it is to the retail sector, how important it is for us to encourage you all to give. And we are prepared to put our dollars where our mouth is. So please do be on the lookout for matching opportunities. They'll come across your way either through the radio waves or online, through your organization's Facebook pages and Twitter and Instagram accounts. Please be on the lookout for that and give and tell others that their money can go twice as far as it might otherwise.
Now, here in Northeast Florida, you've tabulated this at the Jesse Ball DuPont Center. More than 500,000 people, that's nearly 40% of the people in this community, are struggling to even afford basic necessities right now. So as we look at the First Coast and the greatest needs, what advice do you have for people that want to help in our community? Where do you think their dollars can do the most good?
I think you should pay attention to the organization that you are giving to. Make sure that it is an organization that can sort of be the most effective in delivering the services you think. You have choices, whether you're giving to food pantries or whether you're giving to job preparedness programs or rent assistance. There are different ways in which you can research this. You can always go to GuideStar.org. You can go to Charity Navigator. Make sure that the organizations you support are able to do the work that you want them to do. And, you know, especially in this time of extreme economic hardship, what's amazing is that people have been so generous. In the first half of this year, giving was up 7.5%. Over the same time, GDP was down more than 30%. That is incredible. People who are able to give are just doing whatever they can to make sure that they're doing what they can to reduce suffering. So you're in good company. Please go and find the organizations that you think are doing great work and double down.
Great advice. She's Mari Qureshi, president of the Jesse Ball DuPont Fund here in Jacksonville. Thanks so much for spreading the word about Giving Tuesday with us. We appreciate it.
I appreciate you spreading the word about Giving Tuesday.
So again, Giving Tuesday is tomorrow, and tomorrow, December 1st, is also World AIDS Day. Now, we've come a long way over the years in preventing and treating HIV and AIDS, but there is still much to be done, particularly here on the First Coast, where rates of HIV and AIDS in Duval County are much higher than the national average. The new medical nonprofit Hope Across the Globe works to diagnose, treat, and educate people about HIV and AIDS here in this city. And they also work on those issues around the Hep C virus. I had a conversation with the Hope Across the Globe medical director, Dr. Ivan Guerrero. Take a listen. Dr. Guerrero, good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us on this World AIDS Day.
Good morning. How are you doing today?
So tell us about Hope Across the Globe, a new organization here in Jacksonville working to treat people with HIV and also Hep C. Tell us about your mission.
Okay, so this started around 8 years ago between me and Dr. Pablo Pella, who is the other medical director. We have been treating patients with HIV for almost 20 years here in the Jacksonville area. So we saw that there was some deficiencies for patients coming to the hospital with HIV infection. There was no follow-up about who was taking care of these patients, trying to make sure that they were coming to the provider for treating their HIV infection. And we knew there are places in Jacksonville where they are, you know, they are taking care of good care of patients with HIV, but there was some deficiencies in the system about making sure the patient with HIV diagnosis were really followed by their providers. There were deficiencies about patients have no insurance. There was still a stigma among patients trying to go to see their doctor for the first time or follow up. So while that happened, HIV was still a source of infection in the community because having patients with HIV diagnosis and not being treated increased the risk for persistent infection in the community. So that's when we opened this organization, the nonprofit organization, for trying to do something more of what we were doing already.
How does your model work?
Okay, so we see patients without insurance, and we have a help from the federal government, so we have a 340B agreement with the government, so we can provide that treatment to patients that don't have access to insurance or to treatment. So basically, we see patients without insurance, patients that have no access to health care. Our organization provides the mechanisms for them to get access to HIV care. We have a full infrastructure of case managers trying to follow these patients and making sure that they have everything they need so they don't have an excuse of not getting their treatment, you know?
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about how important that is, particularly in Duval County in Jacksonville, where we have higher than average rates of HIV and AIDS. Can you talk about
Correct.
How critical the need is in this community?
Yes. So it is really interesting because Duval County was a few years ago in number one or number two nationwide about the high number of patients infected with HIV. You know, I've been doing HIV for a long time. I used to work for the Department of Health, and we have seen that Duval County still has, we are number six, I think, nowadays. We are number six in the nation. So there has been significant improvement, but there is still a lot of work to do for trying to decrease the number of newly infected patients with HIV. You know, and one of the ways that we try to do this is also trying to prevent patients to get infected with HIV. And as you must know, we have also what is called PrEP. Mm-hmm. It's called a treatment that we provide for patients that don't have HIV but has a higher risk of getting infected. They have to take one tablet of a medication that is available nowadays and we provide that treatment every 3 months. We have to test this patient for HIV, for hepatitis, and also for sexual transmitted disease. Our job is not limited to HIV. Our job is also involving hepatitis C and sexual transmitted disease.
So it's threefold. So how do you how do you see this work expanding in 2021 in Northeast Florida? Because this is a critical public health problem for this city.
I think the model that we have compared to other services that, that are already available in Duval County, in Jacksonville, is that this model is run basically by the same providers. So our point of view is completely different compared to other centers that do HIV. We can find the problem from the beginning. We have more access to patients that are in a high risk of getting HIV or having already HIV infection and trying to bring them to the system so they can get access to treatment. That's what that does that make difference. So as physicians, we have a better overview of what we see when we see patients in the hospital with the HIV and all the complications that we don't see as we used to see in the past, no? So from time to time, we see people dying of HIV, and really, really bad. This shouldn't happen in the U.S., in Duval County, in Jacksonville in 2020 at this point.
Right, that shouldn't no longer be happening.
We have the weapons.
Sure.
But it's happening sometimes, no?
It still happens, wow. So how can people how can people then support your efforts at Hope Across the Globe?
Okay, so if somebody, they can support our organization sending us patients, because like I told you, you know, the model we have is more patient-oriented because it's basically run by the same provider. So we can approach the patient in a different way. Patients feel more treated in a different way because when you have your provider, your doctor telling you what you have to do, why you have to be concerned that we're going to provide you all this kind of help, then we can defer the continuity of care to the case managers that will continue following the patient and see what their need is. Now, let me tell you, we are not doing anything different of what other centers are doing, but the main difference is that we can take the patient from the beginning. We take care of the patients ourselves. In the hospital, when they are referred to our clinic, we are the first person that they contact with the treatment or with the follow-up. Okay, so, and we can see, have we seen a difference? Yes, we have seen a difference because we used to see the deficiencies of hospitals discharging patients, sending to different clinics, but nobody knows what's going to happen to this patient once they are out of the hospital.
So, you're following up. Where's your clinic located? How can people access you?
Our clinic is in South Point Parkway. Is very close to St. Vincent Southside Hospital. It's on 6A17 South Point Parkway Boulevard. In there, we have two offices, 801 and 802.
So they're Hope Across the Globe, and I want to thank you, Dr. Ivan Guerrero, Medical Director there, on this World AIDS Day, doing important public health work in this community. Thanks, Doctor, so much for being with us.
There is a lot of work to do, and I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
We'll be right back.
Conductor Thomas Wilkins returns to Jacksonville to lead the symphony in Tchaikovsky's beautiful Serenade for Strings. Written in the model of his great idol Mozart, the Serenade for Strings is still filled with Tchaikovsky's hallmark romanticism. The images it projects are rich, deep, abstract, and enduring. The program also features Poulenc's wonderful Sinfonietta, December 4th and 5th in physically distanced Jacoby Symphony Hall. For tickets and information, visit jacksymphony.org.
I'm Peter O'Dowd. Democrats made history in the Sun Belt in the 2020 election. For the first time since the 1940s, they'll hold every Senate seat in Arizona, Colorado, Nevada, and New Mexico.
It's a shift that seems dramatic of the moment, but it's many years in process.
The shifting political landscape in the Southwest, next time on Here and Now.
Today at 2 on WJCT News 89.9.
On the next Fresh Air, author Neil Gabler will talk about the late Senator Ted Kennedy and the decline of American liberalism. Kennedy was a progressive force in the Senate for decades, but Gabler says his personal conduct helped to undermine the moral authority of liberalism. Gabler has published the first volume of a two-part biography of Kennedy. Join us.
Today at noon on WJCT News 89.9.
Scientific excitement around new vaccines is real. Some of what you might be reading about them is not.
We're living in a lot of uncertainty. These are brand new vaccines, and they're making them in new ways.
Barely half of all American adults say they're ready to take the vaccine. So what's being done to build trust in future treatments? That's next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, we are encouraging everyone to shop local this holiday season. Our gift guide is at WJCT.org with lots of local purchase ideas, and that includes holiday spirits. The St. Augustine Distillery has come up with some special locally made offerings for the holidays, as well as a new fill your own bottle experience. Philip McDaniel is co-founder and CEO of the St. Augustine Distillery, and he's here now as we talk about Cyber Monday. Hey, Philip, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Melissa. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. So it's been a challenging time for business this year, but you guys are hanging right in there. What do you have on tap for the holidays?
Well, you almost said it literally. We have on tap something a little bit different in a new fill-your-own experience we've created. It's something that we saw at a distillery up in Kentucky in Louisville a couple of years ago and really thought it was a very clever idea, and we kind of took it and put our own spin on it. But basically, guests get to come in. They spend about 15 minutes. It's a personal, hands-on, fill-your-own experience where you get to step behind the production lines of the bottle, label, and seal your own personal bottle. And the spirit that's in this barrel is unique. It's only about 150 bottles out of this barrel. And it's cask strength, and it's delicious.
Wow. So they get to come in distance but still have sort of an in-store experience. Is that right?
That's exactly right. Yeah, so they would come into the gift shop, and the cool thing, because it's Cyber Monday, we're creating a gift certificate that folks can buy and gift it. We think it could make a very special gift for someone, or a bourbon fan or a whiskey fan for the holidays. So they could get the certificate and then redeem it at another time. But the idea is you'd come into the gift shop and just say, hey, I'm here for a fill-your-own experience, and then they would walk with one of our team members. We're obviously doing everything very, very COVID safe and responsibly. Everybody wear masks in the distillery, and you're away from the public. But it's your chance to literally stand in front of this barrel. You grab the glass bottle, you fill it, to the exact level, and then you actually put the cork on it and seal it. You get to put the safety seal on it, and then you fill in the label with all the information, the barrel number, the proof, the date, and all that kind of stuff. It's really special.
That's creative. And let's also take a moment to talk about your efforts to expand the sales of this locally made product, particularly in liquor stores and such. The legislature needs to do a fix, don't they, to make your product more widely available?
Well, one of the biggest challenges we have, you're absolutely right, and one of the things we've really been hoping for unsuccessfully so far, but hopefully it'll happen this year or soon, but we recognize that a lot of people want to support their local businesses, including their local distilleries, and if distilleries have the ability to actually ship to the consumers directly, as they can currently do with all Florida wineries, it would, keep things safe and also allow us to, to monetize our business and allow fans to feel good about supporting us directly. So if they could do one thing, that would be a huge win. So we're hopeful this legislation that may come up.
Okay. And because it's Cyber Monday, as you said, people can do some online buying to support a local spirit distillery like yours.
Correct. So in our case, we're selling the gift certificate for the Fill Your Own. They can do that. They can go online and buy regular gift certificates. And they can order anything from our store other than our spirits directly. So we can ship them any of our mixers or wonderful barware, any of the cool food products that we have that are made locally. Those are all available on our website. The only thing we cannot ship, fortunately, is the thing that we make, which is our spirits.
Right. So, and that takes us back to the law. Okay.
Correct.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's a little bit of discrimination there.
So visit the St. Augustine Distillery, a local business on Ribery Street, where you can this week this month actually, do a free tour. It's the Fill Your Own Bourbon Bottle Experience, a perfect gift for the bourbon lover in your life. As you step behind the production lines at the distillery and bottle, label, and seal your own personal bottle of cask strength bourbon, no reservations required. And you get to meet Philip. He's a great guy. So, Philip, thank you so much for being with us, and we'll talk to you soon.
It's our pleasure. Thanks, Melissa. Wonderful. Take care.
And again, it's Cyber Monday. If you want to buy local, shop small, shop local, go to WJCT.org and check out our All Local 2020 Holiday Gift Guide and support local makers. And that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Josh Torres is show director. Our news director is Jessica Palumbo. Bill Bortsfield is our digital editor. Keep that feedback coming. We appreciate it. Emails go to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. You can catch this rebroadcast tonight at 8 o'clock on the radio, or our podcast will be up later today, wherever you listen. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on WJCT News 89.9 Jacksonville. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Remember, everyone, keep wearing your masks and have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.